Good evening. Last week we read Parshas Bahar, where we find the prohibition of Onah. Lo Yisonu Ishes Amiso. The Torah tells us we're not allowed to oppress each other. Oppression, as the Gemara spells out, exists in two forms. There's Onah B'Mamon, pocketbook oppression, which mostly manifests itself in, overcharging to an extreme degree, or perhaps deceitful business practices, while there is also onah bidvarim, says the Mishnah. Kishem sheyesh onah b'mamon, kach yesh onah bidvarim. And that the Parak Hazav, which talks about onah, ends off with that Mishnah, which tells us about this prohibition of onah bidvarim. And the Mishnah goes on to list a couple of examples that essentially anytime you hurt somebody's feelings, anytime you do something to cause somebody emotional pain, so that's a violation of onah dvarim. And the Mishnah says, for example, let's say you remind somebody who is a Baal Tshuva about his past. You say to him, Zuchor Ma'asecha HaRishonim, remember how you used to do this Avera, you used to do that Avera. So that's a prohibition of onah dvarim. Or if you say anything that will cause somebody pain, you tell somebody, hang this fish, for example, and you know the person had a relative who was hanged. So the idea of bringing up the word hang to cause him painful memories, that's also a prohibition of onah dvarim. Now, one famous example the Mishnah gives, a person goes into a store and he asks somebody how much something costs, and he has no intent of buying it. So the Mishnah says that's a prohibition of onah dvarim. It's generally assumed that what that means is that you're getting the person's hopes up. He's going to get all excited. He thinks maybe he's going to make a purchase there. Maybe he's going to have a commission. And it turns out you don't even have that on your radar screen. It's not even something you're considering. So that's also a problem of onah dvarim. Rabbi J. David Bleich Shlita has published an article in Hadarom where he expressed a theory which others have as well, that onah dvarim is not only about causing somebody pain in any which way, but it's primarily about treating somebody with an attitude of disrespect. So within that context, if you look at the example of going into the store and asking somebody about how much something costs, so then presumably what it means is not really the issue that you're getting his hopes up, but the issue is that you treat him as subservient to you, because presumably, normally when you ask somebody in a store how much things cost, or you ask questions about a product, so at least there's a potential of a mutual relationship, that maybe you're going to buy something from him, so he'll help you out, so that the hope will be that they'll both end up benefiting. But if you have no havmin of that, and you're just there to use him, so then it seems to be that's what Rabbi Leich means is included in that particular interpretation of onah dvarim. But in general, any type of infliction of emotional distress is considered to be onah dvarim. So there are some additional interesting examples. Say, Sefer Yireim says you give somebody a nasty look, that's a violation of onah dvarim. And they always point out, if you go to summer camp, so one halacha you learn in summer camp is that it's an issur d'oraisa to wake people up in the middle of the night. It's called gezel shena. So the question is, which Yisr Dereis is it? You have a hard time finding a mucker for the Yisr Dereis of Gezel Shena. So one possibility is that Chuvas Karen LeDavid in Simen Yud Ches, he suggests that it's an Yisr of onah dvarim. You're causing somebody to feel uncomfortable, to be distressed by being woken up. It's not Gezel Mamon, it's onah dvarim. Others suggest, I think someone showed me that Tam Nechemi has an article about this, that it could be considered Gezel Mamon also, because if you're causing the person to be less productive the next day, so that's causing him a monetary loss as well. But the Karen LeDavid had this thesis that essentially we're talking about onah dvarim. The punishment for onah dvarim, Mordechai writes that somebody who commits onah dvarim should be subject to malchus. It's an issur in the Torah, so it should be subject to lashes. And the later Svarim, they said they didn't understand what he was getting at, because normally we have a rule that if something is a lav shein bo maisa, if it's a prohibition that you don't do actively, it just happens through speech or something like that, or something less than that, so then that's normally considered to be a lav shein bo maisa, and it's not subject to malchus. So others thought that maybe what the Mordechai meant was that this is a Marcus Martis situation. And maybe it's a situation where you get Derabon and Dikamakis. So that's another possibility. In any event, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch both write that a Bezdin has the authority and has the obligation to do whatever is necessary to enforce and to punish in the instance of the Naos Devarim. So somebody commits a Naos Devarim, so that Bezdin has to act and has to do something about it. Has to make sure it's not going to happen again. So I think it's in that spirit that the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva where he talks about, I forgot whether it was a shofet or a chazan, somebody who was at a position in the community. So he committed an act of anas devarim against somebody. Because here, the anas devarim that he's talking about, if you play a cruel practical joke on somebody, that's called anas devarim. If you have a situation where two people joke around and they laugh and they're both happy, that's one thing. But you have a situation where somebody uses somebody else for his amusement, so that's also certainly including the prohibition of anas devarim. So somebody who does that is committing a serious aveira. So the question was raised that this person played a mean joke on somebody else in the community, that there was a person in the community who was known to be very into the mitzvah of milah. So this chazan or shochet, what he did to him was, he said, oh, guess what? I had a baby boy. The bris is on Tuesday morning. I want you to perform the bris. It's a three-hour horse ride to my estate. Come there and perform the bris. So the guy schleps out for 3 hours. And it turns out, surprise, it's a girl. There's no bris. So he feels like a fool. So the question was, so what this chazan and shochet did seems to be a terrible aveiros. So the question is, how should they punish him? Should they fire him? Should they do something else? The Chassam Sofer has a long tshuva about how this is not such a long tshuva. He has a tshuva about how this is not acceptable. It doesn't mean necessarily you have to fire the person, but there are other things you have to do. He has a whole list of punishments. One of the interesting punishments he comes up with is that the person should pay asar zehuvim, which is a fascinating idea. Now the Gemara says in Chulin there's a concept of a stolen mitzvah. Somebody steals your mitzvah opportunity, so you make him pay asar zehuvim. So it's weird to figure out how this applies here because there was no mitzvah. There was no bris to get stolen. So I thought maybe what the Chassam Sofer meant is that you see from that Gemara in Chulin that, so to speak, the value of a mitzvah, when you have to put a monetary price on it, the value of a mitzvah is a sar zehuvim. And therefore, since this person schlepped out thinking he was getting a mitzvah and it turned out there was no mitzvah, you have to compensate him for what he thought he was getting. Maybe that's what the Chassam Sofer was getting at. But in any event, the point is that Naos Devarim is a serious Aveira, and it has its own possible punishments, whatever they are. So one of the most profound manifestations of Naos Devarim, which as we'll see, is Naos Devarim plus, Naos Devarim on steroids, is what the Gemara calls Halbanus Panei Chaver Barabim. The Gemara over there, following from the Mishnah, so the Gemara gets into this idea of a very serious prohibition of Habanus Panei Chaver Barabim. And the Gemara tells us that David HaMelech had a very hard time with this, that he was trying to get over the whole episode that he had with Bathsheba, and that people would chaper him, people would drive him crazy. He tried to give a shiur on Hilchos Shabbos, and people would say, yes, King, it's a fascinating shiur that you gave on the Pesach Reish Lo Nichalei. Tell me, what's the punishment for somebody who gets involved with a esophagus ish? So he responded, oh, misasa b'chenek, he gets executed, but yesh lo chelek l'olam haba. Well, somebody who embarrasses somebody in public, ain lo chelek l'olam haba. He has no chelek in the next world. So that's a pretty powerful thing to say. So the Gemara says, based on that, that noyuch lo l'odam shiyavu al safek eishas ish v'al yadam p'nei chaver b'ram. It's preferable for a person to get involved with a possibly married woman rather than to embarrass somebody in public. So it's not so surprising that you don't find that brought l'halacha. That you don't find in the Sefer Halacha. Probably doesn't come up so often. You don't find people having that question so often. But the Gemara goes on to tell the story of Tamar, that Tamar in Parshas Vayishlach, the Torah tells us the story of Tamar and Yehuda. So that Tamar was pregnant and was carrying Yehuda's child, but Yehuda didn't know that. He thought she had somebody else's child, so she's on trial for her life. And it sounds like from the Torah that she was ready to let herself get executed rather than embarrass Yehuda. It was only because Yehuda was willing to come forward once she showed him the simanim that he did so. That's why she went along. But otherwise, it sounded like she wasn't willing to embarrass him in public. So says the Gemara, what do you see from there? It's preferable for a person that he should throw himself into a fiery furnace rather than embarrass somebody in public. So that, Yataka find, the whole discussion, is that really true? Because it sounds like it's saying that essentially embarrassing people in public is Yahari Valyavor. That's something you have to give up your life rather than violate. Which would be quite a striking statement. You have to emphasize, do not try this at home. But it sounds like the Gemara is saying that. Then why would the Gemara be saying that? So presumably, because the Gemara goes on to say that embarrassing somebody is considered to be like shvichas damim. It's considered to be like an act of ritzicha. Because the Gemara gives this physiological clue, because the blood drains, so it's shvichas damim. But presumably it means something else. It means that the pain of embarrassment is so profound, a person very often thinks, not very often, but occasionally a person might think he'd rather die than go through that kind of humiliation. So that's apparently what's going on, that the Gemara compares it to Ritzicha, provoking the question, is that a literal comparison? Do we really mean to say that it's actually like murder? Or are we saying, no, it's not really like murder, it's just a way of expressing things. So one consequence would be, would you say it's Yehari V'Yavar? Because it didn't by murder. If somebody says, kill that guy or I'll kill you, kill that innocent person or I'll kill you, so you're supposed to say, no, I can't kill him, I can't kill an innocent person. So maybe you have to say also, if somebody says, humiliate that person or I'll kill you, you have to say, sorry, I can't do it. So does anyone accept that opinion in the halacha? So it seems like it was machlokes harishonim. That Rabbeinu Yonah apparently takes the literal view that it is Yehari V'Yavor, that it's actually Daimel Ritzicha. And it could be that Tosfos takes the same view, because Tosfos Maseches Sota raises the question, Tosfos and Sota Daf Yud, raises the question that we know the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin and Daf Ayin Dalid, that there are three Yehari V'Yavors, there are three things that you have to give up your life rather than violate. And this is not one of them. So how come it's not on the list? So the interesting thing is not the answer Tosfos gives, but the answer it does not give. So it could easily answer the question by saying it's not on the list because it's not literal. So the fact that Tosfos doesn't say that led some of the Achronim, like the Brisker Rav and others, to say that, oh, you see, Tosfos believes it is literal. Problem is, the other answer Tosfos doesn't give is that it's included in Ritzicha. Avizrayim to Ritzicha, right. So by not saying that, that's also a little bit of a question. So Tosfos is a little mysterious. But some of the Achronim thought that Tosfos is following the view that it is literal. Well, on the other hand, you have the Meiri. The Meiri, in his commentary to Brachos and to Sota, where this Gemara also appears, so the Meiri says that this is not literal. This is Derech Azhara, Derech Tzachas. This is essentially an expression. And it's often assumed that the Rambam also felt this way, because the Rambam does not list this as a Yehari V'Yavor. And the Rambam also says that anything that's not listed as a Yehari V'Yavor, you're not permitted to volunteer to give up your life. So therefore, it sounds like it's not a Yehari V'Yavor according to the Rambam. So this was an issue that was debated, and the Binyan Sin has a truth about this, Rabbi Yosef has a truth about this. And again, while we say don't try this at home, it's striking to see that this is something that the Poskim considered. I saw once an article, it was written by Rabbi Pinchas Levinson in one of the rabbinical journals, where he wanted to suggest that the issue is that really, maybe in theory it's true. On paper, maybe, yeah, you have to give up your life rather than embarrass somebody. But in practice, we're never going to do that, because in practice, You can never know that the circumstances are so extreme that that's actually justified. So therefore, in practice, we would never do it, but maybe in theory it's true. So this was an issue that a lot of Sfarim seemed to discuss, the question of, is this comparison actually literal or not? So, for example, there was an opinion that nobody later followed, striking to mention, is the view of Rav Shlomo Kluger. Rav Shlomo Kluger, in his Chidushim Tachoshim Mishpat, and his Chachma Shlomo at the end of Hashem Mishpat, so Rav Shlomo Kluger says that he has a different svara for this, which we won't get into now, but the conclusion is relevant to this whole idea, that normally I see somebody drowning, I see somebody suffering a risk to life, samuchiv to save their life, leisamen al dam reacha. But let's say, if I save their life, I'm going to end up sacrificing my life, so then I'm not supposed to do it. I'm surely not mechiv to do it. So, says Reb Shlomo Kluger, similarly, again he has a different way of getting to this point, but similarly he says that if one would have to humiliate himself in order to save himself from embarrassment, or humiliate himself in order to save somebody else's life, he wouldn't be obligated to do it. Because apparently, if it's like death, so you don't have to kill yourself to save somebody else's life, you don't have to embarrass yourself either. So this view was not really accepted by anybody else. Many later Sfarim argue on it. The Kli Chemda has a discussion about this. Dayan Grossness and his Tshuva Slav Arya has a discussion about this. Zalman Nechemia has an essay about this somewhere. And most notably, Zalman Nechemia's father-in-law, Shlomo Zalman Arbach, and his Tshuva is Minchas Shlomo and Simon Zion, so he strongly disagrees with this. But not necessarily because he thinks it's not literal, because he thinks maybe it is literal. Because he raises the question that why should it be that we're not Mechal Shabbos to save somebody from embarrassment? That maybe just like you do Mechal Shabbos to save somebody's life, so too you should also be Mechal Shabbos if you see somebody about to be humiliated. So as Lamaisa, it's not the practice, but he's not sure why not. So if it was an issue of the Rabbana and Shabbos, so then maybe he would do it because Kavod Abrius is Docha the Rabbanans. But Shabbos Daraisa, so we're not Mechal Shabbos and all Daraisa, but he's not sure why not. You could say the Svar is the same Svar that Rav Pinchas Levinson said before, that maybe, again, in theory, there could be a situation where you would do it. But in practice, we're not going to take any drastic steps like that because we can never know that it's serious enough to justify it. A similar question was also discussed Rav Nassim Gestetner and Rav Osner and his Tshuvas Shevet Alevi. Talk about the fact that Gemara says that a Kohen who killed somebody is not able to duchen. So the question comes up, if a Kohen amalbim p'nei chaver b'rabim, a Kohen who goes around embarrassing people, so is he allowed to duchen? Because maybe you should say he's like a murderer. So these poskim weren't ready to go that far. There are other svarim not as well known than the svarim on Hilchos Nesias Kapayim, which do consider that maybe you should go that far. Similarly, the Shulchan Shlis Yankiv has a discussion that maybe we should say that Pnei Noach are also prohibited in embarrassing people in public, because maybe if it's considered to be like murder, so it should be included in the Sheva Mitzvahs Pnei Noach. So in practice, he doesn't assume that's the case, but it's another possible example of how you could take this. So the question, yes, sir.
Doesn't all this have to be only Barabim?
I'll get to that in a minute. Good question. So we'll come to that. So another issue, which is more philosophical in nature, but also ties into this, is we saw that David HaMelech, in his response to the nosy reporter, so he said that somebody who was Malbim Pnei Chaver Barabim Ein Lo Chelek Leilam Haba. So where'd he get that from? So it's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Okay, but where'd the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos get it from? So here it seems to be L'shitaso, because you see the Rambam and Rabbeinu Yonah both have explanations that work out L'shitaso. We saw before in the issue of Yehariv L'Yavor, so Rabbeinu Yonah says, is Yehariv L'Yavor? And the Rambam says, it's not, the way we interpreted it. So Rabbeinu Yonah is L'shitaso, because in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, so he says, why is there no chelek in Olam Haba? That's because it's like murder. So it has the same onesh as the murderer. Aye, but we never see that a murderer has no chelak in Olam Haba. So he says, you're right, it's worse than murder. Why? Because it's like murder. But a murderer, he's going to do tshuva, he's going to realize he did something horrible. While somebody who's malpim p'nei chaveru b'rabim, so he has no chelak in Olam Haba because he did something just as bad, but he's never going to do tshuva because he's not going to realize. While the Rambam, who we saw, didn't really think, apparently, that it's Yehar V'Yavar. So he, l'shitaso, he says, why is there no chelak in Olam Haba? Not because this Avera is such an egregious one that it automatically knocks you out. But rather, because somebody who regularly is Malbim P'nei Chaver B'Rabim, so that's a simon that he's presumably not on the list. Such a person, it's hard to imagine that he's a Ben Olam Haba. Such a person is presumably not somebody who made it in to begin with. And that issue, there's a third explanation as well, which is important to get us to the next point, that some want to suggest that maybe it's Mida Keneged Mida, because what's the mucker for Olam Hava, the mucker for a neshama that is eternal, that has such a reward? The mucker is Tzelem Elokim, people are created in the image of God, so therefore there's a potential for eternal reward. But the Tzelem Elokim is also the mucker for something else. It's also the mucker for Kavod HaBrius. If a person doesn't believe in Kavod HaBrius, doesn't believe in human dignity, so then maybe it's Mida Keneged Mida, he shouldn't have a Chelak in Olam Haba either. So that could help us perhaps understand something else. So the question was just raised about the Rabbim tonight. So the whole phrase, Malbim Rechaveh Rabbim, we have to figure out what exactly it means. Now, first of all, what the word Malbin? It means you whiten somebody's face. But normally we assume if you get embarrassed, your face turns red. So Taka, there are some Gersos that say Ma'adim Pnei Chaver B'Rabim. But usually it says Malbin Pnei. He says your face turns white. So what's Pshat? So as the Tosfos Yontif and others explain, that really when you get humiliated, first your face turns totally red. That's called blushing. And then all the blood drains from the face. That's called blanching. That's when you turn white. So that's the Malbin part. But what about the Rabbin part? So there's two questions you could ask. One, the question you just asked, that do we assume that it has to actually be Barabbim? Is that just an expression, or is that the condition in the Isser that it has to actually be Barabbim? And two, so what does Rabbim mean? So in terms of what Rabbim means, there's a consensus that Rabbim really means not 10 men or 10 people, but 3. It's an expression borrowed from Hilchos Lashon Hara that we talked about earlier in the year, right? Apei Tlosa, so 3 people are enough for publicity. So says says this group of Achronim, that's all you need for it to be considered Rabbim, and that 3 includes the embarrassee and the embarrassor. So 1 witness is already considered to be enough for Rabbim. So that's in terms of defining what Rabbim is. But does it have to be the Rabbim? So that was Machlokes HaRishonim. Some thought that yes, and some thought no. And some later Sfarim wanted to suggest an in-between position, that maybe we should say that in private there's a prohibition, and in public, that's when everything we've been talking about till now, you heard about Yavar and Mebichel Shabbos and etc., and the Chelak and Olam Haba, all of that is only when it's Barabim. So how do you get such a Chelak? Where does that come from? So you could say as follows. You could say that the Chelak is based on the question, what exactly is the prohibition of embarrassing people in public? So the fact is, there really are 2 prohibitions. The Tashbetz points out in his commentary to Pirkei Avos that really, essentially, there are 2 prohibitions involved. One is the prohibition we've been talking about, the prohibition of Anas Tavarim. And the other is the Gemara in the middle of Masachas Erechin. The Gemara talks about the obligation of Teichacha, that somebody's doing something wrong, so you have an obligation to set him straight. So says the Gemara, okay, so I'm going to do that. Yochol afilu yishtane panav. Maybe I should do this, even if it means his face is going to change color, he's going to be humiliated, I should do it anyway. Says the Gemara, no, lo sisa alav chet. You should not bear iniquity, you should not get in trouble because of him. If you're going to embarrass him through the Teichacha, so then that's going to be an aveira for you. So as the Rambam points out, that this is the style we often find in the Torah, that the Torah gives us a prohibition in the extreme to tell us, in other cases it certainly applies as well. So the point being that here, even if you have a mitzvah to say something, Still, you shouldn't do it in a way that could cause embarrassment. So, kal v'chomer, if you don't have a mitzvah, certainly it's not permitted to say something. And presumably because here, you're going to, or say something in a way that makes them change color. Because that changing of the color, that blushing, that the halbanus p'nei chaveru b'rabim, that is a strike at the tzelem elokim, and that's a very serious offense. So what it seems is that we have two different prohibitions here. On the one hand, you have a prohibition of anas tvarim, and the other, prohibition of leisisal of chait, and it's not redundant, they address different things. But anas tvarim addresses the emotional pain. So if you embarrass somebody, so you cause them emotional pain. And many other ways you could do it too. Embarrassing one is one such way. But when you embarrass them in public, and their face changes color, so then that's also an attack against the Tzelem Elokim, against human dignity, and that's prohibited because of Leisisa Alav Chet. So one could argue that maybe that's why you have this in-between shita. Those who say that in private it's prohibited, and in public it's Geferlos prohibited, it has all the concepts of Yehari Vayavar and Leisisa Alav Chet, etc., is because we have the two different prohibitions at play. So in private you have an Isser of Anas Tavar. And Anas Tavarim is not a joke either. That's what we were discussing in the whole first few minutes of the various punishments that could come up for you for even Anas Tavarim by itself. But when you embarrass somebody in public, then you also have the issue of Loisisal of Chait, which is a very serious enhancement, so to speak, in using modern judicial terms. That is a hate crime. That adds a lot to the offense. That's something that adds this element of striking away at the Tzelem Elokim, and presumably all the stringencies that we've been talking about till now are a function of that aspect of the prohibition. Okay, so we'll stop there. Just